Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Listen, don't diss the fish sauce.
Mate, I'll diss the fish sauce as much as I like.
This just shows that there are...
Is this how the intro is?
That you just haven't explored yet in your life.
Is this how...
Of all people, Andy, it's very disappointing because you're generally a much more open-minded person than I am in almost every way.
But the thing is, Lars, I've explored fish sauce more than I want to.
But maybe that is the problem.
That's the issue.
I told you, you've done it wrong. That's curious. I now want to know how you've explored using it.
You've got to be very careful with it, you know. Only use, you know, the right amount.
It's dangerous in the wrong hands.
Very small.
It's
dangerous in incompetent hands as well. I'm saying.
Right. Gotcha. So I might have sent you guys a note to the shared WhatsApp group this week saying, if we don't open the show by discussing Chelsea versus Ajax, you're all dead to me.
I missed it, Andy. Can you just can you tell us what happened? What was it, a good game? I thought Ajax would, you know, be smarting after that defeat in Amsterdam.
Yeah, well, as you would imagine, you know, with having let in that late goal, they were focused really on defending this time.
Yeah.
That was the main thing for them. Anyway, having sent that message late at night on Tuesday, a couple of days later, I still feel the same. So, Lars, have you ever seen 20 more seconds of vivid Champions League action than that bit?
Well, I have to say, Andy, I've watched a lot of Champions League football. I've been going back in my mind. I don't think I remember seeing a team concede a penalty and have not one, but both of their centre halves sent off in the same movement. That is a new one for me, I have to say.
The product of the new rule to a certain extent,
yes,
which
absolutely
means that the referee can play the advantage.
Yeah.
Which
is sensible.
Your hero in the middle did very well, James.
Yeah, I mean, Gianluca Rocchi, no reproach from me. I just think, you know, outstanding refereeing performance. I think he'll be commended when he has his, you know, UEFA debrief this week. So up to you, Rocchi. No Rocchi Horror Show this time. I'm not so sure the Ajax players feel that way.
Would you say that to Dusan Tadic's face?
Not in a mix zone.
In the mix zone afterwards.
No. You could feel the anger coming out of the speakers. Where I was doing the Champions League radio show, they just cut a little bit of him speaking after the match. And he couldn't compute. He couldn't get his head around it, which I can completely understand. I mean, if you go backwards, even though it's a crazy spell, as you say, the referee didn't really do much wrong. Okay, I think there's maybe a discussion on where the current handball rule is, for example. Mm-hmm. But
let's not go there.
But then no one knows. Not. I mean, it's so vague. It can mean anything if you look at the wording of it. It's daft.
Yeah, it is.
And we'll leave it there.
It is totally daft. Let's leave it there. Although the best bit was, of course, Ajax continuing to push for a winner with nine men at 4-4.
Again, in the category of things I've never seen before, I don't think I've seen a team with nine men away at, to be fair, one of the bigger clubs in Europe, keep pushing for something even without having the numbers to do anything.
So this ended up being kind of a theme of the match day, I felt.
Yes.
Because just as when, for example, City had to put Kyle Walker in goal and there were essentially 10 minutes for Atalanta to shoot at him, and City very maturely basically kept the ball up the pitch, played it in Atalanta's corner flag, and Atalanta were unable to essentially take advantage of that quote-unquote vulnerability, because we all know that Walker, having made more saves than Edison and Claudio Bravo in that game, will now be starting against Liverpool at the weekend. But
They're a club that played David James up front. I mean, come on.
But this, Andy, I think was the most chaotic Champions League match day that I can remember. I mean,
same.
You opened with that question to Lars about 20 seconds where just everything changes before your eyes. You could say the same about the Dinamo Zagreb-Shakhtar game as well. Stoppage time in that where Zagreb are 3-1 up. They think they've won the game, and all of a sudden they're going in down the tunnel and it's 3-3.
I mean, some would say it's the story of Andrei Pyatov's footballing life that he makes a horrendous error and somehow covers it up with an eye-catching highlight, as he did by winning that penalty right at the end.
Got boshed in the head.
Yeah, he did by Cardiff legend Kevin Teofil-Catherine. But the thing about that is, obviously I know your Cardiff, Lars. We'll come to that in a minute from the Ole years. But
as long as the league... It gets passed by the lawyers, we'll have to see.
The glory days of Cardiff FC, I like to think.
Exactly. But even when you wind that back and when you unpick it all, the fact is that Dinamo played a really good game, and they were in the third minute of stoppage time, 3-1 up, and they managed to go off the pitch with a draw. Now, I still think they've got a chance of qualifying if you look at the group. The fact that City...
No, Atalanta will go through, Andy. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, ultimately, Shakhtar have kept that group open.
Yes.
Because when Kyle Walker was pulling his gloves on Zagreb, that's when they kind of... We're 3-1 up, and you felt, right, this group in some respects is almost done, because City are on 10 points. Zagreb, I think, would have been on 7 had they held on to win that game.
I mean, James, is the difficulty for Shakhtar that Manchester City drew that game? Because to me, that the fact that City have to go and get a point off Shakhtar now makes it a heck of a lot more complicated.
Yeah, I think so, but... Also, you've got to take your hat off to Shakhtar, because again, they have essentially got a result in stoppage time. They did that at San Siro against Atalanta.
And they should have lost that game as well,
exactly,
shouldn't they?
That was the one game that Atalanta have regrets about. You know, a lot of people will be scratching their heads when they recall the result away at City, but that can happen when you go and play City, that you get thrashed. But... Yeah, this is a team that keeps believing. It's the manager who's replaced Paulo Fonseca has shown himself very able to affect games from the bench and make substitutions that have impacts. That, you know, at the moment, you know, Shakhtar are on level on points with Zagreb. They've both shared the spoils in this double header.
Just goes to show it's all timing, really, isn't it? I mean, Luis Castro in a different life could have ended up at Reading.
Yeah.
Goodness knows where he'd be now.
Reading.
Yeah, but, that's true.
But the Pyatov thing, it's baffling to me that he still has a gig at a pretty reputable year. Because I was at Stamford Bridge in 2012 when a very, very good Shakhtar team with Luchescu as the manager.
I was there as well.
Yeah, it was a great night. And like with Willian and Fernandinho and Teixeira and Serna still close to his pump, that was an extraordinary Shakhtar team, who at times played Chelsea off the pitch. But like Pyatov threw in two goals, like the most terrible mistakes. and Lucescu just throwing him under all the buses in the presser afterwards. Yeah. I mean, not even attempting to defend his goalkeeper.
It does surprise me.
He said something like, we all saw what happened out there or something. Yeah. It was a complete takedown of his own goalkeeper.
Yeah, they recruit so well in Brazil, and yet they've still got Piatov in goal. I want to see them have a Brazilian goalkeeper.
Maybe that's the thing. Maybe he's the chair of the acclimatization committee or something like that. But
it's
even
not just,
even
it's
that
not just a wild mistake, but it's just basic errors. If you look, I think it was the second Dinamo goal. Just freeze it just as the cross is about to come in.
It's the third. It's where Danny almost sets it up for a Damien at the far post.
Just freeze it just at the point of the. If you go on the internet and find the highlights, freeze it at the point when the cross is about to come in.
The official highlights.
Piotr's positioning is outlandish. Like, how can a goalkeeper who's played the game for more than like 20 minutes decide that this is where I want to stand when there's a cross coming?
Well,
I'm
all for
maverick goalkeeper.
I have to thank you, Lars. Already, you've proven your value to the OTC family by explaining something for me that I couldn't get my head around. I think as soon as I came off air last night, I went back and looked. I thought, how is it possible to dive over the cross like that?
And the positioning is...
Yeah, there you go. You've pointed it out to me. Because I think the thing is, when the ball comes to the back post, I said at the time, it's the easiest goal Adeyemi will ever score because he's a yard out. But he's so surprised the ball's come to him. He nearly missed it.
Yeah.
It hit the inside of the post on the way in, didn't it?
Like you could, yeah. If you have an adult human in goal... There's just no way that ball should end up there.
But, you know, let's talking of things that shouldn't happen, let's go back to Chelsea-Ajax. And I guess for a lot of the game, the whole craziness obscured the fact that this was another sterling Ajax performance on the road in Europe. And that is the thing that's made them into the team they are. It's what's made them in the Champions League in the last year or so. And it all starts when they get that draw at Bayern Munich and they play Bayern off the park for quite a lot of that game. Now, that fragilises Bayern to a certain extent. And it also and makes other teams think that they can go there and actually play Bayern on their own terms or closer to them rather than just staying on their own half, in their own half and waiting to get beaten. But I know some of the form in Amsterdam has been quite samey, hasn't it? If you look at, well, what eventually happened to them against Spurs last season. But you look at the key performances over the last year. Valencia this season, Chelsea this as well, I suppose you can say to an extent. And then Spurs, Bayern, as we said, Real Madrid, Juventus, exactly. And quite apart from the Bayern Munich connection he already has from coaching the second team. Now Niko Kovac is gone. This must be one of the main reasons why Bayern are interested or should be interested in Erik ten Hag.
Oh, undoubtedly. He ruled himself out before this game.
For the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be curious though, and you know, we'll get to this later in the show, what Bayern do, because you know, with Hansi Flick winning his first game in charge, we've got Dortmund coming up. I think if he convinces them over the next 3 or 4 days that he is a steady hand on the tiller, then maybe they'll give him the job until the end of the season and they can review and assess then.
Well, but he was kind of appointed with that in mind because he wasn't Kovac's pick, was he? He was appointed in July, Hansi Flick. Here you go. Here's a little bit of help for you.
I mean, that is a bit of a weird thing if you're the manager of a club and a number two is brought in who wasn't your pick, who has himself been a number one in the past.
It's almost like Di Matteo at Chelsea.
It's one of those things that would worry you a little bit, wasn't it?
See, I was thinking Venables at Borough.
Nice.
But yeah, same. Tomato.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you just put this game into context from an Ajax point of view before that crazy incident with the double red cards, to go to Chelsea and score on them in the way that they did, with that wonderful training ground routine of Ziyech playing it off Kepa's face and scoring that way, a kind of trademark Ajax goal, I think, you know, one that you used to see in the 70s.
We actually have a life-size model of Kepa on the training ground in sort of mid-flight so they can work on that angle and just get it straight on the noggin.
That is the kind of marginal gains that Ajax and Erik ten Hag go for, which is why Bayern are obviously so interested in him. But I suppose, again, with ten Hag, Andy, I mean, there might be other jobs, elite jobs available in the summer, and teams that have borrowed the tenets of Ajax football and basically made them their own. I'm saying Barcelona, mm-hmm. who might look at him and think, actually, you're the right guy to come and make the most of Frankie de Jong, the players that we've acquired over the last few years.
Yeah.
Because this, I think you often judge teams by how well they perform away from home in Europe. And there, it's certainly a way of appealing or getting foreign media on side as well. Mm. When you think this guy and this team and this coach are really good, because if you're going to Turin and you stun the fans there, if you go to Real Madrid and you stun the fans there, if you go to Chelsea and you stun the fans there, it is a hell of endorsement for your coaching credo and your coaching ideas if you keep going that.
Lars, where does this sit in light of Bayern's not yet admitted, or at least not yet publicly admitted, interest in Arsene Wenger? How do you see Wenger fitting into this?
Well, as an elder statesman till the end of the season, surely, because we mentioned Ten Hag, who might be, it'd be a surprise to see him move from Ajax in the middle of the season.
Isn't he going to want one of...
Maybe next summer.
And isn't he going to want the job for longer, though?
25 years?
That's possible. I'm just saying from Bayern's perspective.
Yes.
The logical thing for them is to bring in someone until the summer. You mentioned Ten Hag, but also Thomas Tuchel might be on the market there. He's been admired by the Bayern hierarchy for a long time, and he's at PSG. You never know what happens there. It's one of those clubs where, there's a shelf life to managers, and it's not very long.
I mean, Bayern went out in the round of 16 last season. In many respects, it would be perfect for Wenger to come in. I mean, he could repeat the same result.
And he can't go out to
Bayern, though.
Wenger has, in fairness, overseen some of Bayern's biggest recent wins. So, I mean, there could be something there. No, listen, I think it makes sense. I think, obviously, if you look at the recent... I mean, I keep using this quote, but I thought he was quite cute. My compatriot, Jan-Åge Fjørtoft, mentioned on Twitter that the only three people in the world who seem able to manage Bayern Munich is Ottmar Hitzfeld, who's 70, Jupp Heynckes, who's 74, and Udo Lattek, who is dead. this sort of idea that it's almost like an elder statesman character is what you need to have to succeed at Bayern. Because there's just so much going on there. It's a club with so many strong voices in the dressing room, upstairs, all around it. So you need to be just an ace diplomat as much as you need to be a good coach to make it work.
Funny, really.
And that's not necessarily a young man's game.
Funny, in the circumstances that Jose Mourinho hasn't been up for the job.
Although he was
top of the betting market for quite a long time.
Just like putting a Mento into the Diet Coke bottle and just see what happens. I mean, it would be fun, but maybe you wouldn't want to be the one to clean up afterwards.
James, the question I would ask with Wenger, it looks impressive. And I think especially for... dare I say, people outside the UK, it looks impressive. It looks a very safe pair of hands. He's not a guy who did a lot of coaching in his last years at Arsenal. Now, the points in recent times when the Bayern players have revolted, not just when they lost 5-1 to Frankfurt last weekend, is when they don't feel that they've had that sort of specialist attention. Now, I don't know if that's hangover from Guardiola and his incredible attention to detail. And the fact that, the Champions League thing, him not winning it there, is a bit of a red herring. He lifted their football to a level that they've never, ever seen there. He changed the game. Now, ever since, the players have been Ancelotti. He's not hands-on enough. Niko Kovac. He hasn't got enough of identity. Where would that leave Wenger after, 3 months in the job?
Well, I think in many respects, given the reaction to Kovac and his coaching and the criticism of it, that he didn't have a sophisticated enough idea that when it came to everyday training sessions, I think there is still that contrast with what the players experienced under Guardiola. And we're talking about the senior players who are still there, the most influential players within that group, thinking, we deserve better than this. I think that is a problem and would remain a problem with Wenger to get this job. Manuel Neuer, I think, gave an interview in France Football only a couple of weeks ago, which was seen as side eye, I suppose, at Niko Kovac, where he was basically saying, when we play a pass, every pass needs to have a message. You need to transmit something when you play this ball to your teammate so he knows what the idea is behind this pass and what we're trying to achieve. As though, ultimately, a lot of the passing under Niko Kovac was sterile and aimless. Now, yeah, I think Wenger was cutting edge at the vanguard at the very beginning of his career in England at Arsenal. In fact, in many respects, as we've all discussed in the past, he brought English football into the 21st century in many respects. But when it came to embracing ideas that are now kind of commonplace in European football, even something as the amount of time spent on video analysis, breaking games down in detail and giving your players the most information possible, really, when it comes to, right, you're going to be playing against this right winger. He likes to come inside on his left. These are his tendencies. This is how you'll deal with it. I think that's what Bayern players were used to under Pep and have since found to be lacking in every coach that has followed him.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
So fast forward to this weekend, De Clásica at the Allianz Arena between Bayern and Dortmund. Dortmund have had a few nightmares there in recent years, Lars. Mm-hmm. But having faced this very difficult mini spell, which a lot of people thought could define their season, home to Gladbach in the Pokal, home to hitherto unbeaten Wolfsburg mm-hmm. in the Bundesliga, then the game against Inter in the Champions League, the return, and now De Clásica, they're in much better shape than a lot of Lucien Favre's critics thought they might be coming into this game.
They really are. And I think in particular, the way they turned it around against Inter was interesting because it wasn't some big tactical shift or anything at halftime. Like they just went out and were better. And they just did everything quicker with more intensity and Inter just couldn't live with it.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing if you're Lucien Favre? I mean, obviously, if you're winning generally, it's a good thing for a coach. But do we see the coach's touch on that is my question.
Well, I would interpret that as a positive because it shows that it's all there in the squad. Like major surgery isn't needed. Major change of methodology isn't necessarily needed. But I guess the criticism of Favre was in the springtime that he wasn't the sort of strong leader and they felt they needed when things were drifting and Ajax and Bayern were catching up with them.
That's why they wanted Jose Mourinho.
They were kind of, because, you know, we talked about this, like they were ahead, but then Bayern were coming behind them like sort of zombies that just wouldn't stop and they kept like dropping points and it was all really bad. And Favre being a sort of bit of a schoolmasterly sort of the type man, didn't, you know, shout and scream and jump around in the dressing room to
shake. So what you're saying to kind of elaborate on this Walking Dead is they needed a kind of Negan and a Lucille in order to kind of just beat them into shape, literally.
That might be true, James. what I'm saying is it's interesting.
Now you're coming from where I'm coming from, and no one gets your references.
That might be true. I'm just saying the fact that they turned it around the way they did and that he was able to get that out of them is a very positive, because that is exactly the type of reaction that I think he was accused of not getting from them in the past.
I guess that's my question. Is he getting it out of them? I think the funny thing about those past three games is they've not exactly flirted with disaster in them, but certainly in that first game against Gladbach, you know, they were going into the last quarter of the game a goal down to the league leaders in the Pokal. And if they'd have held on there, Gladbach, everything looks very different. Of course, sliding doors. But they weren't very good for the first half against Wolfsburg either. A lot went wrong in the first half against Inter, who looked, much as they'd looked at Camp Nou, very well-oiled and efficient and all the rest of it. So I just wonder, is there an argument that it's the players playing off memory rather than any plan? Because we know there's so much talent in the squad, but we also know that players like Torgan Hazard and Julian Brandt can have a few little moments and change things up. And that's the sort of quality they've got. I mean, I know you had a very close eye on this game on Tuesday night between Dortmund and Inter. I guess because of Chelsea Ajax, you're probably the only person in the UK watching it for large parts of that. But what did you make of the Dortmund side of it?
So I thought the defending was terrible in the first half. To get beaten with just a simple ball over the top, Akanji, body shape, all over the place, Hummels gets done. And you expect more, I think, from a senior player like Hummels in that situation. Second goal, I think it's just a brilliant inter-team move. The kind that undid Barcelona as well. Barcelona who, to be fair, no great shakes in defence these days either. But I think second half, the comments made by Inter and the players afterwards was that Dortmund played the ball quicker. They were more intense, as Lars was talking to. And Inter have this habit of fading in the second halves of games. And Conte, after the match, complained that I'm always playing the same players. They're knackered. We can't sustain the kind of performances that we've been putting in first half or first hour against Barcelona, first half here in Dortmund. That allowed Dortmund to come back into the game. I also just think that Dortmund found the dope in the Inter team on Tuesday night, and that was Cristiano Biraghi. And all they did was just keep giving the ball to Hakimi. And over and over and over again, he got in on that Inter left-hand side. He ended up scoring twice on the night. He's Dortmund's top scorer in the Champions League.
Best fantasy league pick ever.
And then, Andy, there's just the simple fact that maybe Diego Godin, as we would discuss this time last year, isn't the Diego Godin of 2010, 2012 vintage.
Well, they've kind of used that back three to almost paper over the cracks and hide some of the ways in which he could be exposed. But that didn't work in the second half there, did it?
No, I mean, ultimately, I think one of the disappointing things for Inter's players and for Conte is that the second goal comes from a throw-in. And Godin gets beaten by Brandt. And it was one of those kind of schoolboy mistakes that you don't expect from, I'd say, a veteran player who's won what he's won, like Diego Godin. You certainly don't expect it from an Antonio Conte drilled Inter side. And this is an Inter team that, while they've conceded lots of goals in the Champions League, and you know, have also in Serie A been on the end of a 4-3 win against Sassuolo. Again, second half really faded in that game. They do defend very well. You know, if you think of their advanced metrics, XG against, shots allowed, they're top of Serie A. That defence is a very good defence. But I think combination of fading second half, mistakes, and Dortmund just playing at a pace which I think Inter found it very difficult to live with, particularly when Brozovic The guy who basically gets their possession game going and is able to help them keep the ball and take the sting out of teams that play at pace by moving it around them. He really dipped and has, yeah, I think has only missed 15 minutes of football so far this season. That all played into Dortmund's hands. And this was the theme of the night when it came to analysing the Italian performances, because Alejandro Gomez, after the Man City-Atlanta game, said, look, and this was seen as a real indictment of Serie A, they were like, well, you know, why have you only got 1 point after four games? It's like, well, teams in Europe just play so much faster than teams in Serie A. Mm.
Well,
so much faster.
That's interesting. Well, we'll come back to the Antonio Conte part of that, because I know you're champing at the bit to have a word at that. But before we do, Lars, where do you think this leaves Dortmund for De Clasica? Can they put some of those Bavarian nightmares to bed?
I think they can. I think it's very good to have this sort of moment when they're, you say they were flirting with disaster. I mean, going 2-0 down to an Antonio Conte managed Inter, I think, is more heavy petting with disaster. I think you've gone slightly further ahead there. And the fact that they were then able to turn it around and really like show what they could do in the second half gives you that bit of a moral boost. And you're coming off two wins domestically as well. You know, Bayern are not in a good place. I mean, there's no reason why they should be completely sort of traumatized by the ghosts of defeats past in that classic era. I think they should have every chance.
A bit of a tight hamstring for Jadon Sancho. We saw him go off in that game, but they've shown in recent weeks, haven't they, that they've actually the players to do okay without him.
Yeah, no, they do. I mean, that sort of three behind the striker, they have a couple of issues. I mean, they have a couple of options this season, which is a bit
too many.
Positive.
Some might say.
Some might say, and some of the ones who end up on the bench a lot this season might be amongst those saying it. But it does leave them capable of handling that sort of thing. I was keeping an eye on Bayern last night, and they were playing Olympiacos, so it's always going to be that sort of game. But they looked no less anemic in Herr Flick's first game in charge there. I mean, there was a lot of sort of passes that weren't transmitting any messages at all. And I know it's a tough gig playing a deep Olympiacos at home and stuff, but there was no immediate improvement there. So, interesting. The Clásica should be good.
Talking of dated references, it never ceases to amaze me that despite not having grown up in the UK, you can reference a lower level.
That's one. Well, we had that show in
Norway. Wow.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Antonio Conte. He's going Conte again, isn't he?
Well, he's been going Conte pretty much since day one at Inter. Now, you're talking about his post-match interview.
I am.
On Sky Italia, where he basically invited out the entire board of Inter. Where he said, you know, it'd be great if basically one of the chief executive or the sporting director could basically come and talk to the media instead of me, because I'm sick of basically saying the same thing. And we're sick of hearing it, I must say, which is Conte complaining that he's always playing the same team and he needs more players. He needs him to spend more money. And he was very dissatisfied with ultimately how they went about their business in the summer, even though they broke their transfer record twice. I've paid $75 million for Romelu Lukaku, the player that he absolutely wanted and wouldn't compromise on. You have to get me Lukaku. They did end up getting that deal done. Barella as well, who will cost them upwards of $49
million. Wow.
They signed, I think, 9 players in all, so almost a completely new team. And yet, Conte still feels that they could have done more, even in a financial fair play world, which I think is staggering when Inter have tried to do everything they possibly can to make Antonio Conte happy. In some respects, you can compare it with what City did for Guardiola in preparing the way for him, in that they appointed the chief executive, sporting director.
Or the management structure that he wanted.
The management structure that he wanted in bringing Beppe Marotta, who was a free agent at the time, over to basically run things at Inter. And I must say, Marotta knows Conte very well, but even this must be trying his patience, because he just... I wonder how the players react to this as well.
Are you saying we're shit?
Well, it's not only that. It's for example, saying... You know, Goodin's the only one who's actually won anything of the players that we've got. So, you know, this expectation that, you know, we should be competing to take over from Juventus in the league and do something in the Champions League.
Just to clarify, James, there's no sense that he wasn't involved in picking the players. They're all his picks as well.
Well, I think there's a sense that Godin was already incoming.
Yes.
Because that was a deal done essentially last January when Spalletti was still in charge. He'd just been given a new contract and the Icardi thing had yet to really kind of explode in Inter's faces. But certainly Lukaku was a player that he absolutely wanted. I would say that Sensi and Barella, who he again name-checked and said, yeah, we've signed players from Cagliari and Sassuolo. I mean, what do you expect? Do you expect them to basically turn into very good. Yeah, and they've been brilliant, particularly Sensi, who unfortunately has been out injured, came on late in this game. His first appearance since before the international break.
James, speaking of Cagliari and Sassuolo, I saw you float a little something on Twitter. If only they had Raja for moments like this.
Yeah. Which, again, now this kind of briefing and counter-briefing going on as to who was behind Raja Nainggolan basically being pushed out the door by Inter.
Yes.
Now, there's been this sense that it's always been kind of Conte-driven because Nainggolan, when he was at Cagliari, when he was at Roma, particularly when he was at Roma, he always said, I'll never go to Juventus. They're the dark side. Can't stand them. And Conte, I think, always seemed to take that quite personally, right? I don't want that kind of character in my team.
Okay.
But over the last 24 hours since he's made these comments, there is a sense that maybe he wasn't the one really pushing Raja out. Maybe that was led by the people above him who had experience of what went on last year when Conte wasn't there at the club. I still think that knowing what we know about Conte from his time at Juventus, particularly from his time with Chelsea, how he handled Diego Costa, for example, I think he would have basically nodded his head in approval if Marotta, Ausilio came to him and said, right, we need to get rid of Icardi, Nainggolan and Perisic. Mm. But certainly, I think, you know, one of the things that he has done is he's sacrificed depth for culture, ultimately, in terms of like, okay, those three guys have been very good players, but I want everyone to come in here, you know, be on the same page as I am, and anyone who's not, we need to get rid of them. And they've got rid of three very good players. Icardi scored again in match day four in the Champions League. Perisic came on and scored for Bayern Munich. Mm. Nainggolan's got Cagliari off to their best start since they last won the league. And, you know, again, you wonder what the strategy... It's not so much wonder what the strategy is here, but yet you look at Conte and say, well, yeah, you made your bed, ultimately, and you've got to lie on it. And I still don't think that the club could have done any more to satisfy this manager. I don't really see the point in complaining about it now, beginning of November, when the January transfer window doesn't open for a couple of months. You know, and ultimately, there are other teams in Serie A who've got far worse injury crises than Inter. You think of Roma, for example, who are effectively having to play Gianluca Mancini, a centre-back, in midfield because every other midfielder, apart from Jordan Veretout, is injured. And they're on a very good run and have actually come together in adversity. Inter are getting results, putting in some decent performances as they were the other night. And yet, you know, Conte is so high maintenance. Oh my God! I mean, it must be wearing, even for Marotta, who knows him inside out. It's like, oh, come on, man! Just yeah, you've said all this. We're aware of it. We'll meet. We'll discuss. But please, just you know, I mean, because none of the players said any of this in after the game. They were like, we were immature, or you know, we lost our shape. We had lapses in concentration, and ultimately, in these games, you get punished that way. So they had very technical responses to why it went awry on Tuesday night. I mean, Conte has just deflected from all of that. Conte tried, rather than deflect, he tried to basically bring the spotlight on him in terms of, wasn't my game plan good? Because Fabio Capello, who's a pundit in the Sky Italia studio, basically said, Antonio, your game plan for this was excellent. You prepared for it really well. And Conte was like, well, that, mister, is why I'm so pissed off. if I had the players, the squad basically to sustain what we did in the first half, we would have won this game.
Can we have a little bit more sympathy with Carlo Ancelotti and his current travails after the duel with Salzburg?
I mean, I think if if you're the coach and the president orders them into Retiro and you don't think that's the way to go.
To explain, that's them all going and living at the training ground and having a mini sort of boot camp rather than being allowed to go home.
To go on a retreat, basically, to seclude themselves.
Retreat. You see, you make it sound so much more nice than him.
To go, yeah, well, it's to seclude them from the family and distractions or whatever, which is not an uncommon thing for teams in Italy to do when they're having a bad time. And you got to remember, Ancelotti said even before the mini rebellion this week that he was against it, right? So he set himself against the president.
I mean, Lars, he got some big signings in the summer, including Irving Lozano, who scored that equaliser. And you've got to look at Manolas as well. Has he done as well with the team as you would have expected him to do?
I thought he did better last season than I had fully expected him to do. Because I think
this season.
But I think one thing matters to the assessment of the other, in my view, a little bit. Because I think everyone, in inverted commas, were expecting a significant regression at Sarri's departure. Because there was always this sense, even though Napoli were a wonderful team under Sarri, but it was all sort of the Sarri ball making them more than the sum of their parts.
It kind of makes more...
The Sarrismo.
It kind of makes more sense in a Champions League context.
Yeah.
Or at least it did in the first bit of last season. Because I've said this before, but in the first five games of that group, and it was a bloody difficult group with Liverpool, with Trevena Zvezda, who were better than people thought they would be, especially at home, and Paris Saint-Germain. They were the best team in that group for the first five games, and then it all just went out the window at Anfield on
Alisson doesn't make that save from Milik as well, you know.
A save that, because of the context of the save, has been made into one of the best saves of all time, when it's actually quite a routine save.
But my point would be that actually in the Champions League, they're fine, right? If you look at the group.
Yeah.
That's not the problem. The problem is that they were 11 points behind the league in the title in the league, which is not where you want to be in November.
Precisely. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Lars, because Ancelotti going into the season said second's no longer enough. Mm. We have to either win the title or win something. And they've been very disappointing so far this season. I think the issue now is, can they actually turn this around? Not in terms of getting back into the title race, because they're already out of it. And the way Juventus and Inter are going, they're not going to allow Napoli back in.
In terms of not being scrabbling for a Champions League place in the last weeks of the season?
I think there's that. But I also think, can this relationship between the players and the president, the coach and the president, can it survive between now and the end of the season?
Well, it always seemed a kind of unusual union, didn't it, between De Laurentiis and Ancelotti?
It did, although De Laurentiis has this kind of showman flair where whenever it comes to needing to replace a manager, and you wonder, for example, when it became clear that Sarri was going to leave, I thought, it's going to be complicated for Napoli now to find someone as good, if not better. And De Laurentiis goes and gets Ancelotti. Just as when Mazzarri, for example, left and put together that first very good Napoli team with Cavani, Hamsik and Lavezzi.
Would he have come without the cuisine?
There's that. But when it came to replacing Mazzarri, he got Benitez. Benitez was a Champions League winning manager who was able to attract the likes of Higuain, Albiol, Callejon, who would become such a big part of that post-Cavani team. So De Laurentiis has always done a really good job of replacing their top players and replacing their top managers. I think now it's going to be really difficult because essentially, you look at the statement that Napoli put out after the mutiny as kind of a warning there that the club will do everything to protect its economic, its image rights, its assets, essentially, which was almost seen as a... There could be some kind of legal action taken here for the players going on mutiny and breaking the Retiro. Ancelotti went back to the training ground after the game against Salzburg, kind of following protocol, I think. But then you look at the statement that Napoli put out again, and it's like, well, we'll leave this in your hands now. So, Carlo, you can decide whether the team has to stay in Retiro or resume its Retiro or break it. And again, they're inviting him to again go against the president, which I think is tense.
Das ist im Stadion allein in Försterei nicht gestattet. announcer taking it in turns to tell off the home fans and the away fans for pyro. Just the smell of smoke and the sight of smoke all over the pitch. I think we're going to stop the game for a second.
Before we totally ditch the manager chat, I just did want to have a little word for one of your pet subjects, Rudy Garcia, James. I mean, I know, Lars, you were particularly taken with Rudy Garcia, who's had, a difficult adaptation at Lyon, given that the fans almost unanimously hate him. Certainly the angry ones online and in the stands. And he took it a level up. Now, beating Benfica in the Champions League this week at Groupama is absolutely what they needed to do. It puts them back in control of qualification. And also, it's only the second game they've ever won in that stadium at the Champions League, which I think is not something to be sniffed at after six successive draws. Yet, Garcia managed to find a way still to poison the well a little bit, because when it was 3-1...
Poisoned the well, then. Inserting himself in an entirely legitimate manner.
There we go. That's the sort of clarity that you bring to the party. Now, tell us what happened with the substitution he made in stoppage time to, in inverted commas, as Rudy Garcia said, close the game out.
Because I don't know if you mentioned this on the continent before, but there's been a bit of a set-to between the defender, Marcelo, and the Lyon fans.
We've not mentioned it.
No, they had harsh words were exchanged. There was a bit of a bust-up between them, I believe, at the airport in Lisbon after the first Benfica game, right?
Yeah.
And since then, he's been very much a target of the ultras who've been abusing him and his family and all this sort of stuff. So to the point where it was felt that maybe he shouldn't be playing at the moment because it's a lot of bad atmosphere. And I thought it was then quite magnificent from Rudy Garcia, who's another guy who's not very popular at Lyon, in spite of being in charge of Lyon. When this game was essentially won, they were in a really comfortable position. They were 3-1 up, 1 minute in injury time, just to close out the game, as you say, you bring on Marcelo, just to basically show the ultras that I'll play this guy even if you hate him, and it's fine that you hate him, and it's fine that you hate me as well, because that's just where we're at.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it is Garcia, despite the fact that he said he just wanted to close the game out with a more defensive player. This is the Marcelo's wife was on Instagram to have a little word about what had happened, because some fans sung some not very nice stuff about him at Toulouse at the weekend when they won that game. And this is, well, we have to give applause to Mrs. M for this. It says, The club is now going to take sides. But I can guarantee you one thing. If you don't stop this, and she addressed this at one particularly abusive ultra, it's me that will take sides. And I've got two things. I've got time and I've got money. if there are players that will accept this situation, we are not like those sort of players. And I warn you, I'm not going to be frightened by a man, even less so by a man who thinks he's brave, surrounded by his friends. And if you try and threaten me at the stadium in front of my children, you're going to find out.
Okay. Lady M, undisputed MVP of the week.
Yes.
For me. That is fantastic.
Absolutely. But in tandem with Rudy, because, of course, the thing that really topped it off for Lyon fans, if they'd have brought on 16-year-old Ryan Cherki instead, and why wouldn't you? There's like a minute left and you've won the game. He would have been the youngest player in Champions League history. And as the darling of the stadium, I mean, Rudy's done a nice little 1-2 there, isn't he?
It's the fact that he does it in injury time. Like, if you do it when it's 15 minutes left, there is a legitimate argument to be made that it's a smart call. But when you're doing it with 2 minutes left, you're just giving the fans the finger, right? And rightly so.
Yeah, absolutely. You know who could do with some of this coaching magic at the moment, arguably, Lars, is Barcelona. I mean, you look at the current state of them. You know, they didn't lose this week. We can say that against Slavia Prague. But they're top of the group in the Champions League. And this isn't even talking about the context of where they are in La Liga. They've been lucky, just as they were in the first, I guess, quarter third of last season, when other teams tripping up allowed them to stay in the title race. But they're top of that group after four games. You could feasibly argue that they could have lost all four of those games, couldn't you?
Yeah, they haven't been good. And I think not being good against Prague in particular is slightly worrying. God bless Prague, and they've done tremendously. And I mean,
brilliant at San Siro. There's always been this
thing about Valverde, like he's been getting so much stick, but he's been getting more stick from, inverted commas, the international Barcelona fans. It's been the internet fans who've really been on his back, right, for a long time. But then now you're seeing performances and some results that make you think, actually, maybe the internet fans were onto something with, and they're just looking, you know what, they're increasingly looking like Argentina, as in they're a team who have Messi, but don't quite know what to do aside from giving him the ball. And that is always a danger when you have a player who is that good. Like, you have to really make sure you have a good structure in the team so they don't just default to that. Well, it's obviously the temptation, if you're in a team with Messi in it, to just get him the ball, right? Mm. Yeah. But then when you start doing that all the time, you're not a team anymore.
Yeah, and there's this paranoia, and there's been a paranoia for a long time about wasting his prime years. In the short term, does the Luis Suarez injury that he picked up last weekend in the defeat at Levante, which shows that they haven't really sorted out their away form definitively, does that maybe do them a bit of a favour? Because with Suarez out of the picture, okay, they played against Slavia with Dembele, Messi and Griezmann. Didn't really work. Could you argue, in the first bit of Valverde's spell, where he turned around expectations, he brought in 4-4-2, and with all the political stuff going on in Barcelona and Catalonia generally, that almost slipped under the radar. He could get on with his job from the off
with Paulinho,
with everyone talking, with everyone talking about all that other stuff. And they played 4-4-2, didn't they? 4-4-2, I don't think that suits Messi and Griezmann that badly. What do you reckon? Does it work for Griezmann?
No, not convinced it does, but I think the injury gives...
I realise Messi's not Olivier Giroud.
No, this is the thing. But I also think it gives him a clear run at playing the Griezmann, Dembélé, Messi front three for a couple of games without having to think about how Suarez feels about that. And I think that could be a useful thing for him now going forward.
It reminded me of watching Paris Saint-Germain in the Ibrahimovic-Cavani days. In that, Ibrahimovic had opportunities to pass to Cavani and elected not to. And watching the Slavia game with Griezmann often in very good positions and Messi... Look, you're back Messi because he can score practically any kind of goal from anywhere on the pitch. Mm-hmm. But when he hit the woodwork, for instance... Griezmann's completely free next to him. It's an easier chance for him to put away, and he chooses not to pass to him.
But isn't this kind of always how it is with star players? It's like a Golden State Warriors thing. When they bring in Kevin Durant, that means Steph Curry's going to have less of the ball. It's just something you have to deal with.
And Kevin Durant left.
So who's going to constructively dismiss Griezmann in that case, I suppose, is the question. Let's look on the other side before we go to our games of the week. Real Madrid, big win for them against Galatasaray, who was so awful. I'm not particularly sure that proves anything. Great night for Rodrigo, youngest ever scorer of a hat-trick in the Champions League, beating Raul's previous record by some distance. And yet, the chatter this week, Lars, has been about Kylian Mbappe, and to the extent where Leonardo had to come out and say, this is a bit annoying.
But I mean, I don't know.
Because Zinedine Zidane...
Are you telling me that we should feel sorry for PSG that someone is trying to strong-arm them into taking a player off? I mean, what are you saying here?
just to reiterate, Zinedine Zidane came out and, well, didn't exactly kill the rumours and said... He's a sort of player he liked. He's similar move to what he did with Paul Pogba in the summer, I suppose. Where does it all fit? And does that even matter at Madrid?
But shouldn't PSG just be used to this by now? I mean, ultimately, if it's not Mbappe, Real Madrid rumours, last year it's Neymar, it's Barcelona rumours all summer. They should be fairly used to this now. I know it's an annoyance and it keeps happening, but this is just... Yeah, the fact that you have star players and you're playing in a league which, you know, I think is seen as not as illustrious as La Liga, not as prestigious as playing for Real Madrid and Barcelona. And so I think just by virtue of being a star at PSG, you're always going to still be linked with a move away, regardless of the fact that they can pay you more than any of the elite clubs in Europe.
And PSG are also one of the very, very few clubs on the planet who are in a position where they don't have to care about money as a factor on any level, which is like Madrid can't say that. Like so when you get this sort of talk about one of their players, like Leonardo should just come out and say, listen, we have more money than God and he has 2.5 years in his contract. So good luck with that, Zinedine.
But that's the point, isn't it? He has 2.5 years in his contract lost. Should they have been doing the thing that they did with Marco Verratti all the time and just be giving him a new contract every 8 months?
Yeah, but then maybe he wouldn't accept the new contract at this point in time because he wants to at least keep his options open.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap up soon. Of course, even though Luke isn't here, the lads are off taking the ramble to North America. And if you're listening to this on Thursday, you may still have an opportunity to see them in Chicago or Toronto. Like I said, it's I think pretty much nailed on that Pascal Siakam is going to the Toronto show. So keep an eye out for him. RambleLive.com for that. But even without Luke, Games of the Week is alive. Well, obviously, I'm going to choose De Clásica. The Guardian Bundesliga column isn't going to write itself. Or perhaps if it's a good game, it will write itself.
I think it's one of those weeks where it might.
Yeah, let's hope so. Lars, what's your Game of the Week?
Marseille-Lyon.
Oh, good choice.
Rudy Garcia, intensely disliked by his own, going back to the other club where he didn't do that well. In the club
where he belongs.
Yeah. I mean, if you make it out of there without them doing an effigy of you, like happened with Mathieu Valbuena, you've done pretty well, haven't you? James?
I think it's got to be Juventus-Milan. This was supposed to be, I think, a closer game than many are expecting. But Stefano Pioli, who's obviously coming from Marco Giampaolo to try and turn things around at Milan, well, he struggled so far. And if he can't get points against Lecce, well, they got one, but they should have had three. They've now got a really difficult run of fixtures. They obviously lost at Lazio at the weekend. They've got Juventus coming up, and then they've got Napoli after the international break. Real baptism of fire for Pioli.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.